Cool, that guess. Now get up. Time for your release.
You need more Bianca in your life.
Bianca is upstairs in the closet where she belongs.
Mama, we are broke. These little schemes yours just make things worse.
Is this what you want? A world where freaks and homosexuals get to do whatever they desire?
Look at what you've become. An elderly woman living alone on a fixed income.
Vladimir Putin.
Welcome to Bad Gay Movies. I am your co-host, Bill Antonio, and with me is...
Daniel Krolik.
Daniel, how are you today?
How am I any day, Bill?
Someday I'll get a different answer from you, but I'm glad to see your lovely face.
No, you won't. No, you won't. Let's move on.
No, I won't. Before we get to the movie we're covering today, which is a real doozy of a classic, I have returning to the show one of my favorite guests, a very dear friend who I think I've known you for like 20 years now. I think it's been a doozy of a time. He's a fantastic writer whose piece will soon be appearing in the forthcoming publication, A Great Gay Book, Stories of Growth, Belonging, and Other Queer Possibilities, edited by Ryan Fitzgibbon, I believe is the note I have here.
Yes, I'm not quite sure of all the names there, but it was the editor of Hello Mister, the magazine
which your story appeared, as many of your stories have appeared in many publications that I have purchased over the years. You're welcome.
Yes, thank you very much, Bill.
But please welcome my dear friend and guest host, Mr. Matthew Harris.
Yay. Thank you very much. Thank you. Great to be here. I really appreciate it. Good to be speaking with you, Bill and Daniel.
Bill, you really sound like Ben Vereen on the TV show and All That Jazz when he's like a great singer, a great humanitarian. And my dear friend of 20 years.
Well, you know, it's hard to find that line between sincere and not boring, I guess. Yeah. My friends are delightful. I'm always happy to have them on the show.
And I'm so happy because I've never recorded with Matthew before.
That's true. Matthew's been on the show many times and never with you. I have successfully kept you apart until now.
Yes. It's a whole new experience. Why. It's going to be
interesting. And now we're just parent trapping the hell out of this situation.
Yeah. The movie we're doing today is Matthew's selection and is connected to Matthew's last selection and is connected to, I guess, his hatred of me that he's made me sit through both of these films now. Last time you talked about, we talked about Hurricane Bianca, and now we're talking about Hurricane Bianca from Russia with Hate. Matthew, what made you want to follow up with the original and cover the sequel?
Well, I mean, one of the challenges when being a guest host on this podcast is that all of you have done so many bad gay movies that it's hard to find a bad gay movie that you've not covered yet.
And no, it's not.
It's not. I was scrolling through Tubi the other day. Trust me, we've still got a bumper cropper of options coming our way.
Well, at the very least, it was the only one I could immediately think about. And, you know, and I am marginally interested in seeing it because I do like the Drag Race girls. I like Katya in particular. I'd never seen this movie and, you know, I wanted to know how terrible it was.
Yeah. Pretty terrible.
And now we know.
Yeah. And actually, you two are both really well-versed in the Drag Race universe, so I will look forward to the two of you giving me a lot more information than I necessarily know from what I'm seeing here.
Or me.
Well, there's that. Daniel, tell me your experience with the Hurricane Bianca oeuvre. The Hurricane Bianca universe.
Well, let's hope this universe is flat and we've come to the edge. Yeah. I remember the first movie screening when I used to work at the Inside Out LGBTQ film festival in Toronto. And it was sort of just before the Drag Race bubble had burst. Before the girls were just ubiquitous and everywhere. And at the time, it was such an incredible novelty to see, particularly Bianca, who was a winner and so popular, have a venue outside of the franchise.
When Matthew and I talked about the first movie, we talked a lot about the missed opportunity of that movie and the fact that Bianca Del Rio is just superb. I mean, other than being... delightful in the appearance and the jokes, but also like a really good performer, actually a pretty good actor.
I always feel like her aesthetic is as if Rita Hayworth got hit with a makeup gun from The Simpsons.
Yes, and is always consistent as well. It's a well worked out shtick that is always done well. Like when I saw her on the Joan Rivers interview, and then the little that I've seen of Drag Race, and then in these films, it's like this is a performer who knows exactly what she's doing every step of the way. And I don't understand.
So why is she playing this insecure, reticent male school teacher for 80% of the movie?
Is this Roy? Yeah. What's his name? Haylock? Is that? I always forget his name. Yeah. Is this his way of wanting to show range? Because that's fair. But why is this? Why do we not get Bianca Del Rio until the last 20 minutes of this movie, other than a few appearances in Dreams? It pisses me off. The missed opportunities happening here.
Yes, definitely. I mean, it's why have your showstopper not appear and for the majority of the movie? It is a big missed opportunity.
Also, this movie tries to. Patient zero problem of this movie is that it tries to satirize something so big and so terrible and so scary, which is the treatment of queer people in Russia and other certain countries. And even from the get-go, it bites off way more than it could ever possibly chew.
Well, because I was like, what is this movie telling us? Because it begins with talking about laws in Texas, anti-LGBT laws in states like Texas. But then we're like, but you know, they push gays off of rooftops in Saudi Arabia. And it's like, that's not a joke. That actually does happen. Sure. So what are you saying? Like, are we supposed to be grateful that we're not as bad as other countries? Or are we worried that we're going to become as bad as other countries? Because that makes sense. But I never got a full line on what exactly the message was here.
Yeah, I mean, I will say, you know, going into this movie, having experienced the terribleness of the first one, I actually was like moderately surprised at how much I liked this one, mainly because I just put all those political thoughts and like whatever it was talking about politically, I was like, I'm just not even going to pay attention to that. And I'm going to pay attention to the parts that I like. And, you know, for instance, I actually thought Rachel Dratch was a lot better in this movie than in the first one. I thought she.
But she is better. Yeah.
She felt like she was having more fun, and she wasn't as like she wasn't as constrained by her character. Like she was allowed to be like more crazy and weird, whereas I think she was supposed to be the voice of conservative values in the previous one, which is not her vibe at all. Like she's not a perfect person. She is a a messed up wreck all of the time. And in this
she's a Looney Tune character is what she is. Yeah.
Rachel Dratch is so fabulous. She's so funny. She's so talented. Yeah. For a moment in nothing that she has ever done, has she ever give anything to suggest that she could play a good Christian Texas bigot lady.
And that's way more obvious in the first one.
Yeah. I mean, I'm going to use a whole bunch of euphemisms for Jews, but she comes across as East Coast. She comes across as too intellectual. Yeah. She comes across as too manic. There's nothing about her that suggests the heartland. That suggests
comes across
like,
as
good
running
Christian
all of our banks. No, she's also.
Sorry,
I think it's.
I think something slipped out in your last sentence.
She also, I always find she is not as strong a performer as some of her contemporaries in that you cannot give her a movie where she has one take to do everything in 3 days. And she doesn't come off as well as somebody else would. And that's way worse in the first one than it is in this one.
Yeah.
I didn't have a problem with her in this film because I already knew that she was wrong for that part. So I didn't really care. But I do understand why you like this one better, Matthew. There is a slightly more cohesive sense of comedic tone in this one than there was in the last one. What I don't understand is that even with a zero budget and what is probably a very short filming schedule, you know, and it's all shot in New York, which is the first one was all shot in Texas. This one, they didn't even leave New York. And it's fine. You can film Russia in New York. I don't care.
Yeah. And it looks like it.
But why didn't they just go all the way? Why weren't Cheyenne Jackson and Kristen Johnson dressed up as Boris and Natasha? We know we're not really in Russia. We know we're not in a real idea of Russia. So why not just go all the way? Why aren't OG Becky from Roseanne and what's her
Heather
name?
Heather McDonald.
They're playing a joke version of trashy Southern Fox News correspondents. Why don't they have hair up to the ceiling and gaudy outfits on? Like, Heather, why aren't
McDonald,
we doing
Heather
this?
Heather McDonald kind of did.
Right. Alicia Goranson looks like she just wore whatever she wore to the set.
Yeah, and she always sounds the same. She sounded the same since 1989.
Yeah, she always plays sad trash, always.
I mean, I am kind of impressed by all of these cameos, like Wanda Sykes, and like, I was like,
Michael Musto.
What the heck happened? Like, why are all these people wanting to be in this movie?
When did Sally Jesse Raphael grow her hair out or change her wigs? I didn't even recognize her.
You thought that was real hair? She's 145 years old.
No. But no, of course, Bill. But like, that's what I mean. Like, when did she switch to like a long wig?
She's not playing herself.
I wouldn't have recognized her.
I don't think she's playing herself. But I think it's the popularity of Drag Race. First of all, these people, none of these cameos are people who are showing up for more than half a day at the most.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So it's easy to squeeze into their schedule. And Drag Race is taking off. And what we have not realized yet at the time that they're making this movie is that the only thing about Drag Race that's taking off is Drag Race and anything that's a live Drag Race show. Mm-hmm. Like, I know that these people have put out successful singles, but they have not taken over the music industry with them.
When did this movie come out? 2019?
2018? It's like 2 years after the original.
Okay.
And the idea of Bianca Del Rio transitioning into movies technically makes sense, but it turns out it doesn't. Like, no one wants to see the Drag Race people in anything other than Drag Race.
I think I could disagree with that. I think that there could potentially be like breakout stars a la Divine, but it's not Bianca Del Rio in a movie. Like, Bianca is great at stand-up, she's great at doing her solid shows. But in the movie, she is either her persona as Bianca Del Rio, or she's this nervous weirdo. And I don't care for this nervous weirdo. This nervous weirdo is not entertaining in any way whatsoever.
Yeah.
And is just hitting the same notes all like constantly, just complaining about everything. And so there's no range, you know? Whereas I could see like Jinx maybe being more successful as a full character. You know, some of the other, or like a
Ginger Minj could probably do it.
Yeah, yeah, and like some of them have been successful on Broadway. Like Peppermint is doing well. You know, so it's possible. It's just really this is a terrible vehicle for Bianca.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not saying that I don't think it's possible. I think that what I'm saying is that my experience of what I've noticed so far is that it doesn't seem to be that people want them for anything else. And if they're going to, they're going to have to work a lot harder than this movie does. Particularly, as you say, we spend most of the time with Bianca as Richard. If the movie is taking place in an animated cartoon version of Russia, why doesn't Bianca Del Rio get off a plane as Bianca Del Rio and set the country aflame? Why do we have to have Richard?
Because these movies should take a page out of the Strangers with Candy textbook, which takes this insane, obscene character and place them in like a very normal environment. Yeah. To show how depraved everything actually is.
It's the Elvira Mistress of the Dark logic that we talked about with the first one, which is like, I don't understand why this doesn't occur to anyone working on this film. And then for some reason we have Rex, played by Doug Plott, how do you pronounce that name, as the wacky character, which is a wholly weirdly inconsistent characterization.
Very inconsistent.
This, like, he's he thinks Tolstoy is Toy Story, and he's got this like innocent
child.
Was
he in the first movie?
No,
not that I recall.
He wasn't. Okay.
He's apparently most famous for Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt.
I never watched the whole series.
I don't know.
I don't think I've ever seen him play it. And he's on a lovely and underrated TV show called AP Bio with Glenn Howard.
Okay. But like the character is so feral and like fetal that he is about to drink antifreeze off the ground. But then he sasses Bianca quite knowledgeably later on in the motel room, like really like, you know, reading her basically. And at the same time is like sexually very messy in this very... in a way that kind of has agency. It's not like he just flings himself into a room and gets fucked by everybody, but like has this desire and is aggressive sexually, which does not suggest the kind of innocence that we're set up for. And this character is just all over the map.
Yeah. And it's a tough relationship to buy into with him and Bianca, because right from the get-go, they really seem to hate each other.
Yeah.
And it's not begrudging. It's like, oh, well, you pissed me off, but underneath that, we're old friends and I love you very much. Yeah. It's you're annoying and I don't like spending any time with you, and yet they're saddled with each other for the duration of the movie.
Well, then it's boring. It's a boring relationship, and it's a boring characterization, because he doesn't actually like change the vibe in any way in a scene. Matthew, you're dying to say something, and I keep cutting you off.
Oh, no. I'm agreeing with you completely. I think that his characterization is very inconsistent. Like, I was like, is he drunk at the beginning or high? Right. Like, drunk and high are very different vibes, and then, like, is he oversexed? Like, it was very unclear. Like, I think they were trying to go for he's like an oversexed twink kind of vibe that's really high on Tina or whatever all the time. But that was not the vibe he was giving. It was very like feral child.
But if he's an oversexed twink, then he should be drinking antifreeze because he loves antifreeze, not because he doesn't know what it is.
Totally. And I think you need a different actor if you're going to make that character an oversexed twink. You need a different type to play that part.
Yeah. You don't need Kenneth the Page Boy. Yeah.
Yeah. I will say that I did find some of his lines genuinely funny. They were like, I actually laughed out loud because I thought his delivery was very good. Yep. Him and Rachel Dratch were the only people that I laughed at their lines. So
yes. It's just that if you told me that every day they changed their minds about what movie they were making or they were starting afresh, I would believe you because 100%. It's always a different thing.
Yeah. I mean, the story is too complicated, you know, like there's lots of weird things happen. Like, why does Shangela blow up the Kremlin at the end? I don't really understand why that needed to happen. There was just lots of stuff.
Is the Kremlin made out of gingerbread or is it just really snazzy CGI?
Well, I was wondering too, like, where did all the money in this movie go? Is it just to the James Bond opening credits and those animated rats? Is that take up the whole budget?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there was a significant amount of CGI in it, so I guess they spent some money.
But at the same time, if you're going to have a James Bond opening credit sequence, then why isn't it a spy story? Why isn't Bianca a spy?
Yeah. No, I mean, and it seems like they were only riffing on the title, but in no way with the content of the movie.
Right.
You know, why couldn't the whole story be so much simpler? I don't know why they made it so complicated. I think they wanted to have that political aspect. But it's like, no, we don't really need a political aspect. We just need to see some drag queens.
But also, you're right. I think you're right about the spy angle, Bill, because I would much rather see a movie where Bianca Del Rio infiltrates the upper echelons of the KGB. I want to see that movie.
Yeah.
But you already have the element. Like, her friends go to prison and she has to break them out. Like, we already have the elements of a spy
thriller. Why can't you make Katya play like Madam Vice President of Russia? And have Bianca try to seduce her or infiltrate her.
Is
I want
Katya
to see that
the
movie.
Only one of the Drag Race gals who's like actually handsome out of drag? Or is that... Oh, well, Shangela is as well. But like, I wondered about
I don't
about
think
this.
So. I don't think so. I think there's a bunch now.
Yeah. I don't know many of them, so...
Yeah, they've gotten... As the years have gone by, I think they've gotten progressively thirst-trappy.
Oh, okay. Interesting.
I mean, with Drag Race or being a drag queen, I mean, your face, in some ways, if it's... The more featureless it is, sometimes it's better because it, you know, it can paint.
Yeah. And I always think of Milk, who completely gets under my skin, but Milk is a gorgeous boy and an ugly girl.
Yes. Yeah.
And I don't know anything. I don't know the first thing about makeup. I wouldn't know how to contour. I wouldn't know how to make a face, but like he becomes a gorgeous model, hunky guy that turns into sort of like an ugly girl.
Yeah. And Katya's shtick isn't to be a pretty girl anyway. Like the harshness of the features is to be and also why does that performer have the whole Russian thing to their persona? Because as far as I know, it's not their personal background.
I
don't know anything about these people, so I'm curious if there's like a story.
No,
there.
He was really into gymnastics when he was younger, really obsessed with Russian gymnasts, and so learned Russian. I don't know how strong his Russian is, but he learned it, and so he kind of got obsessed with the whole vibe of Russia and like communism and things like that. So he created his character around that.
Okay. Yeah. I was wondering about that. Because as far as I know, his background is like Irish for the most
part. Yeah. Yeah. Irish Boston.
Brian McCook.
Yeah. Brian McCook. That's right. As Katya Zamolodichkova. Right? Yeah, did I say it right?
I think so. The last name is... Zamolodichkova. It is a name of a gymnast in Russia.
Okay. This movie is the same director as the last one, Matt Kugelman. But Matt wrote the first one.
Oh, yeah, I think I went to camp with him.
He definitely went to camp with someone named Matt Kugelman. Matt Kugelman for sure kissed you behind the cabin and then told everyone that you came on to him. That's who Matt
Kugelman. Oh, 1,000,000%. Yeah.
But Derek Hartley wrote this one. I don't know who that is. But you know what you were saying about it not needing the political aspect. I mean, I don't necessarily disagree, but I also understand why when the drag race performers add a political aspect to their output or whatever is because they are so, you know, they have been so quickly politicized since they have become so mainstream popular. Mm-hmm. And so I understand why the motivation to make a film, especially if you're making a comedic satire, is to make it relevant to an issue.
But again, if you're going to take something like that on, you just need to be a whole lot sharper and a whole lot meaner. And that's so surprising, consider Bianca is probably the sharpest, meanest performer ever come out of the franchise.
Yeah, and it's currently working on a third film. There's another.
Oh, lucky us.
Yeah, and it's like, we don't need that because you're clearly not getting it. No, but if Bianca Del Rio got a Vegas residency, I would be booking my tickets right now and flying out there faster than I would.
And that's how she bills herself. She bills herself as the Don Rickles of drag.
Yeah, so then why isn't that happening anyway? That scene where Rachel Dratch is having a tantrum on the floor watching TV and her daughter is sitting over her. Did you notice that her veins were sticking out in a very unappealing way?
Rachel Dratch's veins or the daughter's veins?
No, the daughter. She had this like giant vein sticking out of her neck that had like a crisscross, like a hole in it. And it just looked like her neck was opening up. It was really upsetting me.
You're just jealous because, you know, you didn't eat your unborn twin in the womb.
It's true. I'm just jealous because my veins don't pop when I.
Yeah. But the daughter is also so incredibly inconsistent because some of the time she's her mom's accomplice and some of the time she's like this sweet kid who just sort of got roped into it.
Well, she's supposed to be the villain always has a turncoat henchman, right? Who realizes that they don't know why they're doing what they're doing. It just, it happens all a bit too quickly and conveniently.
I was going to say, too, I mean, the big issue that I had with the movie all the way through was the lighting. It was just really poor. And, like, it was just, like, there was, like, a shot once of Brian McCook, Katya, like me right now with a bright window behind him. And shadow. And I was like, why can't you just fix these, like, obvious issues in the movie, you know?
Because, again, I know it's a quick shoot, but... we've seen movies made quickly that are way more competent than this, and I don't get. And don't try to tell me that it's because you want it to be a messy, cultish, you know, grab bag of elements, because even those are made better. I think that Dicks the Musical probably had more of a budget than this one, but it is a very low budget movie made very quickly and has way too many random, crazy elements, and it works because everyone involved knows what they're doing, and it's genuinely funny. And the music is surprisingly very good.
And it sort of leans into that aesthetic in a way.
Yeah,
that
absolutely. Doesn't. And it also has elements that you just can't explain. Like, I just don't understand what these, what were the little
demon sewer workers? Boys?
The sewer boys.
Yeah.
But I can't explain it when someone asks me about it, but it works. Like, it's hysterical.
But the thing about something like Dicks or something like Rocky Horror Show or Little Shop of Horrors or whatever cult movies we love so much is they have their own sense of internal logic. I feel like the creators, I feel like the two creators of Dicks actually had some kind of a Bible where they wrote down how the characters related to each other and what they were doing there. So the sewer boys, when they showed up, made total sense because they belonged in that world. Just like nothing in Hurricane Bianca follows any kind of internal logic.
Yeah, and also in the case of both of those other works that we're talking about, which are both musicals, they are silly and crazy, but at the basis of it is like a musical score written by people who actually like have proper skills in that department. Like, they are both good musical scores. They're not as random as their story elements. So the combination of that works.
You know, I haven't seen Dicks the Musical, but I think also the problem is that for a large portion of the movie, Bianca does not seem to be having fun, you know? And, you know, with a crazy, wacky movie like this, you want, like, the main character to be, like, kind of full of life and enjoyable in every scene. Like you mentioned, like Elvira, you know, like Elvira, every time she's on screen, you just like her being there.
Yeah.
And every time Roy Halock was on screen, I was like, I want him off the screen. He's so annoying. He's just dragging down this movie so much. And, you know,
I think it's also because it doesn't make sense that, like, it would make more sense that he's not having a good time if the whole time they're like, when is Bianca gonna show up? Why aren't you turning into Bianca? And he's repressing it for some reason, and there's a reason for it, and then finally he decides, no, this is who I am, this is who I have to be. Then his being a bitch as Roy, or as Richard, would make more sense. Yeah. But that never happens. He's just Richard, and no one even seems to remember that Bianca exists.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, Daniel, what were you gonna say?
I can't remember.
Okay. But as you say, like, Elvira is fun because Elvira loves herself and she loves life and she doesn't care that she doesn't blend in. And drag queens are so much fun because even when they're insulting you, they're always laughing with you. They're making fun with you. They're not making fun of you. And they're having a good time. And it is all in the name of fun. And that's like, that's not the vibe.
Yeah. And why would Bianca Del Rio sign off on a property that doesn't show her playing to her strengths, which are so formidable?
Yeah. And doesn't have her either being in drag in real life or being a drag performer, like on a stage at some point in this film, where we find out that Richard is a teacher, but he's Bianca at night for extra cash or because, you know, whatever.
Somebody throws her on stage, hands her a microphone, and all of a sudden she's this amazing insult comedian that she had no idea she was.
Which is kind of what happens in the first one a little bit, I think.
Yeah.
Okay, I don't really remember.
I think they were trying to make her Richard relatable, but there's nothing relatable about him.
I don't want my drag queens to be relatable.
I don't want it either. But I think that's their thinking. Like, we'll have the relatable character in the center. But no, I want my drag queens to be full of life and be, larger than life. I want to live along with their fantasies. I don't want to connect with them that way.
So Matthew, because you know Drag Race better than Bill does, I have to ask you, do you think Darian Lake signed off on that endless litany of fat jokes that were all directed towards her?
Yeah, I don't know. It was very weird. And she didn't get many lines until like towards the end of the movie. I thought that was really strange too.
And every chance they got, they made some kind of a reference of her eating skinnier people to stay alive.
Which always seems like such a hacky joke, right? You know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it would work better if she got to give it back in some way. If at some point she had a moment where her eating people was really convenient, like she eats a guard or, you know, like she proves a great value to what they're making fun of her for.
If she just had a somewhat, like some type of characterization rather than just she's fat and she eats people, you know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. The woman that delivers the package to his hotel room door, not the package. Yeah. The suitcase or whatever. Her name is Deborah Unger. And I'm wondering...
Not Deborah Kara Unger.
But that's what I'm wondering. Is she the reason why Deborah Unger became Deborah Kara Unger when she started making Hollywood movies?
Like Vanessa Williams from Melrose
Place. Yeah, because Deborah Unger was just Deborah Unger when she was making Canadian films. And I'm wondering if this woman, who is a dead ringer for the beautiful blonde Deborah Kara Unger... I'd be curious to know.
I would put this movie on par with about how much I enjoyed Crash. I think I enjoy From Russia with Hate equally as I enjoyed Crash.
And is Anne Ramsey now just Anne Ramsey now that old Anne Ramsey is dead?
Anne Ramsey.
Like League of Their Own Anne Ramsey? Because she was something else. Like
was she also the sister in, there's two that I get mixed up, but was she the sister in Mad About You? Was she Paul
Reiser's
sister?
I get it mixed up with the Jamie Lee Curtis one. I don't know if that's the one you get it mixed up with. She is on Mad About You because, of course, she's Helen Hunt's sister. They're both rangy looking women,
right? They're both women who have like a stride to them.
Yeah. But I love Anne Ramsey to me is a League of Their Own. But I'm pretty sure she had an initial or a middle name for a long time because of the other Anne Ramsey.
Yeah.
This is a very important conversation.
although I would like to see our current Anne Ramsey take a go at Owen Loves His Mama.
Yeah, or The Goonies. Yeah.
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
We also get Janine Garofalo, guys.
We get Janine Garofalo. Is anyone aging better than Janine Garofalo? As someone who was never famous as a great beauty, and yet the years pass and she just looks better and better every time
and
I see her.
And it's never conspicuous. And whatever little help she's gotten along the way is never conspicuous.
She looks great. She just looks great.
She looks great. I wouldn't say she's aging better than everyone else, but she looks great, you know. Yeah.
I saw her perform in Montreal at a teeny weeny little comedy club, maybe 2016 or 2017. And she's 4 foot nothing. She's teeny, teeny, tiny. And you're right, Bill. She's absolutely stunning.
Yeah. And she's also, talk about a great performer, because I guarantee you she was not on this set for more than 4 hours total for this whole movie. And that is someone who knows exactly what they are doing every step of the way.
Yeah.
She is so on. And you regret that you don't have more of her in this film. I mean, her.
I regret that we don't have more of her, period.
Yeah. And that we don't have more of her and Matthew Kemp, because a Janine Garofalo and gay porn star collab is something I didn't know I needed. I mean, maybe star is too big a word to apply to Matthew Kemp, but, you know, notable member of the...
Porn day player? A porn jobber?
I don't even know that I've ever watched any of his stuff. And then I love that her computer program displays the test results as a game of Tetris, which, again, is like a joke that I wish that this movie followed up on more of, like, you know... goofy ideas of Russia as opposed to trying to make it real as a way to also sell the political message as well.
Especially because half the jokes in this movie sound like they could have been written by Yakov Smirnoff in 1986.
Yeah. But also, what are we trying to say about Russia? Because we all know that whatever we know about Russia is like a human rights violation. So again, are we goading, our countries to do something about it? Are we making a comparison to say we're not as bad, but we need to stay on the ball in order to make sure we don't get this bad?
Yeah, it's a good point, Bill. Like, what point are you making by making it political? Because it just seems like a little self-congratulatory, because you're like, oh, at least we're not as bad as them.
Right.
And otherwise, you're just really not making much of a point except saying that this country's terrible to gays, right?
Yeah, or that things are shitty for gays all over the world, which, like, we already know. Because the other thing is that these movies play strictly to the converted. So why aren't you focusing on that and letting us have a good time? As opposed to, as you say, making Richard more relatable in order to, I guess, like, lower conservative straight people in a baggie into the water very slowly in order to get them to accept
this culture.
But they're
not going to find this movie.
They're not going to watch it.
They're not going to see this movie out.
Why aren't you having more fun making it about the intended audience? Because usually when you do that well, that's when something finds a mainstream audience, is when it is like specifically for the people that it's about, without being exclusive.
And if you're just making this movie for the drag race fanatics, then make it raunchier and weirder and darker.
Yeah. And have the Russian guards shirtless or something, you know, so make it more like a Vegas show, because those guys were all super cute. I didn't understand a word any of them were saying because of their terrible idea of a Russian accent. And then that one that says goodbye to Rex clearly doesn't want to kiss him, because he gives them the most awkward grade 6 hug as they're like, just cut that.
Yeah.
You know, if he doesn't want to do it, just cut it.
He might be one of the straight guys in porn, so.
He might be. I think it might also be because Rex is one of those people who's proud of, or the actor is probably one of those strange people who's proud of, like, never brushing his teeth. I have a feeling that's why. I think there are posters who don't want to. I think he's one of those people. I get that impression.
Okay.
I could be wrong, but I have the impression.
Can you name one other actor, Bill, who is proud of not brushing their teeth?
That's a good question. I know that I'm particularly thinking about a real life race car driver who is proud of never showering and never
brushing his teeth. Because I always used to think that probably nobody I could ever meet would smell as bad as Juliette Lewis.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, wow.
I could see that.
But, like, I can't figure out the equivalent of who would be known for never.
I wouldn't think of that. I wouldn't think of her that way now. I would have thought of that her that way.
In, like, her Cape Fear, California days.
Her strange days.
I mean, it's a very straight guy thing to, like, not wash or not bathe properly, because like, I'm just too cool for, like, doing all those
things. It's a straight
guy
actor thing, actually. Yeah. And it's basically how they take their being broke and turn it into something cool.
Yeah.
And turn it into a character trait.
Because I've known that with actors that I know personally, where it's like they make it their thing when really it's just like, no, you just can't afford to turn the water on more often than once a week.
I also just wanted to mention the terrible meet cute in this between Bianca and Brian McCook. I mean,
oh, so bad.
It's so bad. They have no sexual chemistry whatsoever.
Yeah.
Painful every scene they have together, because I also don't think Koch is a very good actor. And so why do they even include this like romantic subplot when it's going to be handled so poorly?
Yeah, it's also a missed opportunity. It's an incorrect choice, because you could have just found a way for Katya to be in this movie as both characters.
Yeah.
And then the love interest for a character like Bianca should be someone not from that world. Like, it should be actually like,
yes,
like the Zeppo Marx character, basically, where it's like, that's the wild card that sets everything in relief. And so that it's like a Chris O'Donnell, you know, like a cute, straight, totally.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Dreamy. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And teen beat idea of a ideal man with no complication.
And it should be Bianca in drag falling in love with this person.
Absolutely. Yes. Absolutely.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. And we also have a very brief cameo of Bianca Lee at the end, who was like one of the main characters in the previous film as her Texas friend.
I can't remember this. What is this?
She is the in real life trans woman who plays the
Who's
like the best friend in the last one. Or she was the one whose family had cut her off.
Yeah, and then she gets reconnected with her family and everything.
Yes,
and she
lives in this
beautiful home and everything.
Yeah.
We also get very overt references to the actual Drag Race TV show, which I don't think we got in the first movie.
Yes, and the Homo Hunters show, which is like the joke of the House Hunters show.
Right.
Which I also forgot to mention that what's her name? Dot Marie Jones, who plays the
from Glee. Yeah.
Yeah. The minister of homosexual propaganda. She's also in Bros. Yeah.
But I feel like even though Dot Marie Jones doesn't have a ton to do, her take on the material is sort of closer to what we need from it.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, again, because it's like, why aren't you doing this version of Russia since we're not making a serious movie?
What were the references, Daniel, to Drag Race?
Shangela can't go to Russia.
Oh yeah, she's on Drag Race. Yeah. That was weird.
And then when she gets to Russia, she has to go to Russia to bring Bianca her wig, which is hiding in Lady Bunny's wig.
Yeah.
So she puts herself in a box, a la season 3 of Drag Race, to give it to Bianca.
Yes. Yes.
Right.
Yes.
That's the package that Deborah Kara Unger delivers, right?
Yes.
Isn't that?
Yeah.
Ooh, did I say the wrong one? They look so similar. Yes. And Lady Bunny, of course, is another cameo.
Once again, that felt weird that it was Drag Race specific, because it didn't operate the way Drag Race operates, which is that they don't have contact with the outside world when they're filming the show. And, you know, and it had it was weird. It was like, why not just have that at a bar?
Was it Jiggly Caliente who randomly walked by?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was odd. Like, once again, very strange ideas where they just want to throw things in and you're like, this doesn't make any sense. Why not just do it in a simpler way?
But also including Drag Race as existing in this world only further confuses me as to how they are presenting Bianca, as whether or not it is Richard's drag persona or if it's actually supposed to be the flip side of a real person or something. Like, is she a performer, or is it just something he does when he can't get his personality accomplished any other way?
In the first movie, was it Shangela and Willem, or was it just Shangela?
Willem was in it.
Who were the best friends? Yeah. Willem was in it as well. Okay.
Yeah.
And were they like her sidekicks, her friends? Did they live in Texas?
It's already expunged from my mind.
They came as friends to like help her out with stuff. I think, I can't quite remember all the details, but they were like sidekicks.
Why isn't Willem in this one? Is there something happened? Or
I'm sure it's probably just a schedule.
Booked and blast. Okay.
Escaping prison at the end of this movie involves putting what is clearly either locals or the whole crew of this movie in gray t-shirts.
Yeah, yeah.
And they run out of the sky to what is clearly a New York building, clearly not knowing if the camera is on or not. Like, they're just confused.
Yeah.
Well, also, so much of this movie took me back, Bill, to like hallmarks of old early Paleozoic BGMs, like the underpopulated crowd scenes, as Matthew said, like the badly lit principles.
Yeah.
So much stuff.
Yeah, and also the beginnings of an idea that doesn't follow through, like the fact that Rex and Rachel Dratch's titsy daughter become friends in prison, but that doesn't really bear any fruit other than the fact that she just becomes nicer. Like, if you're going to have them become friends in prison, then they should like get together on a scheme to foil a guard or break out.
Although I did never think that Hurricane Bianca 2 would share a major plot point with the prestige TV series The Americans, which is forcing how Soviets force people to have sex with other people and enjoy it.
Oh, right.
Because there was a whole flashback in The Americans to how they learned to have sex with strangers.
I only ever watched like half the pilot of that show and I didn't.
Oh, it's so good. It's so good.
I will say the weird forced sex scene was at least super weird. And that interested me because, you know, it is like it's Bianca in drag making out with the gay guy. So it's theoretically on appearance, a heterosexual couple. You know, it was just like weird enough that I was like, oh, this is kind of like some of the political satire they're trying to get to. But it took so much time and effort to get there, you know?
Yeah, it's the Midnight Madness content that this movie should be all the way through.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that it fails at being.
I will say, I want to say some of the lines that I thought were pretty good.
Please.
She gave him an A for his D. I like that. at the beginning, Rachel Dratch said she wanted to get a t-shirt cannon and fire live raccoons. I like that.
And then brings raccoons. She travels to Russia on a steamship, a cargo ship, with only a flask of paint thinner. What does she have in there? She has windshield wiper fluid.
Something like
lighter
that.
Lighter fluid to drink. And there's a raccoon on the...
Which they apparently eat at some point. Right. Raccoons are very throughout this movie, which I of course appreciate.
As Torontonians.
Yes, as Torontonians. I also like, and a snake bit your boob off, which I thought the delivery was just amazing. And finally, potato is for closers.
I wrote that down, and I feel like that's something Janine thought of herself on set.
I loved Rex saying, "I can see Alaska from my room." I thought that was a very clever joke. And then it's Alaska.
And then you actually saw Alaska.
Yeah.
I personally enjoyed when Shangela said, "You've heard of Netflix and chill. What about Amazon and anal?"
What about Amazon and anal?
So there was actually lines that I was laughing at. You know, they were successfully delivered by comedians who know how to do it.
I also would be remiss if we didn't talk about Miss Kasha Davis as the prison. Oh, sorry, Mrs. Kasha Davis, excusez-moi, as the prison warden.
Vicky Leakes, which of course is a great name.
That is a great name.
Yeah.
Well, no, I mean, I don't doubt that all of these people are super talented. And I can tell watching this movie that these people are super talented. I just don't know why I'm watching a first draft of everything.
Yeah.
Because even a low budget, quickly made movie, you still have time to put things together. And I don't understand why no one is thinking to the next step of everything that they do. Like, all you need is, these are the kind of script things that, like, I hand a script over to someone and they're like, well, why not this? And I'm like, oh, why didn't I think of that? Like, it's not complicated shit.
No,
it's to figure out.
It's because Carrie Fisher is dead, Bill, and there's nobody left in Hollywood to do it.
There's no ghost.
Hollywood is a very big word to apply to what we've got.
Sorry.
Yeah.
It clearly just needed a few more drafts, you know, like it did have some of the final lines, but like it just needed some well, because these are and everything.
The top tier of drag queens we're working with. These are not people who just think everything out of their ass when they're performing. These are people who work it out in advance. These are people who prepare and who write great material through hard work. So then why isn't that level of effort being put into this film?
Or at the very least, why wasn't at the very end Bianca in full drag with a microphone? And couldn't she have just killed all the Russians through the power of insults?
Yes, absolutely.
And that way she could have gotten like a tight 7 or 8 minutes of just like obliterating everybody.
I mean, like her walking through the prison, just like insulting them and then they're dying, right? Like that's a great...
Or something. Yeah.
That's a great visual.
But also, are
I'm the new Carrie Fisher.
Are we trying to... And this is a question I often have for my fellow liberals. Are we trying to make the world a better place or are we trying to punish people? Because that is also something this movie goes back and forth on. Because we get the impression that Rachel Dratch is going to have a change of heart and realize that she's been a villain for no reason.
Yes.
But then we lock her up in prison and we're happy about it. So
yeah,
happened? And then we also blow up the Kremlin. So it's like, are we going to this terrible country to show them that our way of doing things is better and they need to be released from it? Or are we just trying to wipe them off the face of the earth?
I think that they the logic of the movie should have said that Rachel Dratch should have had a come to drag moment where she realized right. that she was wrong. But they yeah. clearly wanted her to be the antagonist for the next movie. So right. they were like, she can't change too much. But I felt like she should have changed. Yeah.
Well, that, or if she's not going to change, don't make it seem like she is.
Yeah.
Because that's the thing that the movie changes its mind about.
But they spend way too much, her and Roy spend way too much of this movie collaborating by the time they get to Russia yeah. together right. for her to not have a change of heart.
Yeah.
And again, taking it back to Elvira, Mistress of the Dark, I needed an Edie McClurg type in this role. Yeah, I needed a prim matron, a prim Bible thumping matron.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Edie McClurg.
Edie McClurg.
Yeah, but unfortunately, as we said from the beginning, Rachel Dratch.
It's my favorite McDonald-led character, Matthew.
Rachel Dratch.
I loved it. As a child, I loved going to the Rachel Dratch playground. The ball pit. Oh, those were the days.
Yeah, she's just not that type. So she it just is not successful to have as a foil for Bianca.
No, she's a rascal. She plays yeah. rascal. She's the one to pull out the underpinnings is what she's supposed to do.
Well, she could have been like the wonderful sidekick to real evil church matron.
Yeah, totally. Which is what she usually plays.
Totally. Yeah. Yeah.
Do we have any guesses to what the final part of the trilogy will be?
It's set somewhere tropical. I think she goes to Africa.
I think that sounds like a bad idea.
Oh boy.
Or the jungle. Oh, boy. It's something like that. I can't remember. It's currently in production according to IMDb, so
I think it was in production in 2019, so I wonder if it'll be made, you know.
Yeah. Well, that kind of movie, it's like 4 years of putting money mm-hmm. together and then 10 days of filming, yeah. usually. Yeah. So, you know.
I wonder why Bianca has never played like a cartoon villain in a Pixar movie, because she has the vocal chops for that. That's what I would like to see from her.
Yeah, totally.
I wonder if that's a level of publicity the Disney company doesn't want to take on, just because they always have to deal with conservative boycotts every time
for sure.
anything slightly LGBT in their films. And it's only recently that they've started to take a financial hit for it. Up until now, it was never a problem financially, but mm-hmm. their last few movies have done very, very badly.
Due to the conservative backlash. I think there's lots of reasons why Disney's not doing well with its last few movies, but yeah, definitely they want to think about expanding their audience, not pissing anyone off.
Yeah, but expanding in America, expanding your audience is what pisses people off, because
expanded in that more bland way, right? Trying to offend as few people as possible, and unfortunately queer people are offensive just by existing, so
On top of which, they also spread the, and I love having that we're having a Disney podcast right now. They spread the content to, you know.
Well, we are three adult gay men.
Yeah,
it's true. What else are we going to talk about?
Who can clean out the Disney store with our gold cards, as we often do? No, but it's also that they're not spreading out the representation in their films alongside of making good films. Like these like that Wish movie looked so boring, I was not going to sit through it. I thought that Luca movie was super boring, and I like Turning Red, but
yeah, and the one from a few years ago, Soul,
which was I found flawed,
which all it was totally flawed, and again it sort of read like an excellent first or second draft.
Yeah.
By the time it made it to production.
Their last few movies, though, are all being re-released in theaters this spring because they need to recoup the cash, apparently. That's what I've been told. Anyway, who cares? But yeah, I think Bianca is definitely a good idea for another emotion in Inside Out 3 or something. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Or any sort of animated show. I think she'd be a great character, great voice actor for that.
All right. I had so much fun talking to you guys, and it was such a pleasure to have Matthew back on. And we'll have many times more. Of course, Matthew, please tell our listeners where they can find you, follow you, all that stuff.
Thank you, Bill. Thank you for having me, and great to chat with you and Daniel. You can find me, Double Matthew, on Instagram, whatever Twitter is called nowadays. I think that's about it. Yeah.
All right. Daniel?
Oh, I'm on Instagram at KROLIKD, Krolik D, or Gay for Pay Productions.
Fantastic. I am at Bill Antoniou. And of course, you can follow Bad Gay Movies on Facebook, Tumblr, Twitter, Instagram. And thank you for listening and see you next time.
Bye.
Bye.
Thank you.